Dr. David Martin was recently a guest at the European Union and laid out the timeline for the biggest democide in recorded history. You can see the full video on band.video. This is my short edit.
Coronavirus was identified in 1965 as one of the first infectious replicatable viral models that could be used to modify a series of other experiences of the human condition. What's particularly interesting about its isolation in 1965 was that it was immediately identified as a pathogen that could be used and modified for a whole host of reasons. In 1966, the very first COV coronavirus model was used as a transatlantic biological experiment in human manipulation. And in 1967, we did the first human trials on inoculating people with modified coronavirus. The common cold was turned into a chimera in the 1970s. And in 1975, 1976, and 1977, we started figuring out how to modify coronavirus by putting it into different animals. Pigs and dogs, and that became the basis for Pfizer's first spike protein vaccine patent filed, are you ready for this, in 1990. And in 1990, they found out that there was a problem with vaccines. They didn't work. It turns out that coronavirus is a very malleable model. It transforms and it changes and it mutates over time. As a matter of fact, every publication on vaccines for coronavirus from 1990 until 2018, every single publication concluded that coronavirus escapes the vaccine impulse. In 2002, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, patented, and I quote, an infectious replication defective clone of coronavirus. And that work, patented at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, mysteriously preceded SARS 1.0 by a year. In 2005, this particular pathogen was specifically labeled as a bioterrorism and bioweapon platform technology. And from 2005 onwards, it was actually a biowarfare enabling agent, its official classification. We have been lured into believing that EcoHealth Alliance and DARPA and all of these organizations are what we should be pointing to, but we've been specifically requested to ignore the facts that over $10 billion have been funneled through black operations through the check of Anthony Fauci and a side-by-side ledger where NIAID has a balance sheet and next to it is a biodefense balance sheet equivalent dollar-for-dollar matching that no one in the media talks about. Poised for human emergence in 2016 at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, such that by the time we get to 2017 and 2018, the following phrase entered into common parlance among the community. There is going to be an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen. 7 months before the allegation of patient number one, 4 patent applications of Moderna were modified to include the term accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen as the justification for making a vaccine for a thing that did not exist. The intent was to get the world to accept it.
All right, folks, remember you can find and share this video on band.video. The American Journal channel has the full breakdown. Just want to point out, I was watching a video that went pretty viral a couple months ago with Neil deGrasse Tyson flipping out on Patrick Bette Davis because Patrick Bette Davis mentioned that, well, the vaccine doesn't work. And Neil deGrasse Tyson's like, well, that's because, you know, the virus changed. The virus mutated. You can hear from that presentation as early as 1965. They understood what mRNA viruses do and that they mutate massively. So it's just another one of these things where they knew this was going to happen the whole time. They've known this the whole time. They pretend they don't. They plead ignorance. So when it's like, you didn't tell us about this, they're like, wow, we're all just finding this out right now. Just mass murder across the globe. Stay with us. Daily Dispatch on the other side. We have quite a Friday edition for you here today, folks. It's going to be an exciting one. I will be leaving partway through the show. I'll be abandoning my post. But fear not, it will be in capable hands. I, of course, am going to be flying out of Texas later this afternoon in order to make my flight. I gotta cut my role in this show a little bit short. Of course, I'll be in Nashville for the Rebels for a Cause event. Go to rebelsforcause.com. Tickets are still available, and you can use the promo code Harrison, get a discount. I'll be giving a speech there. It'll be the first speech I've ever given. Do you want to be at this historic event? Go to the Cause Fest. Not including, like, weddings and funerals. First time I've ever been asked to give a speech. And I was up late last night trying to write it. 20-minute speech. Sounds long, but I do a 3-hour show every single day. No teleprompter. Like, how hard could it be? How hard could it really be? After all, we have, what, 10-minute, 15-minute segments. And usually by the end, it feels like they've flown by and I've hardly gotten to say anything. So I was thinking, yeah, 20 minutes, that's no problem at all. I sat down, started writing, kept writing. Hours later, was still writing. I have about 4 minutes of the speech done. It turns out when you're writing a speech and not just talking off the cuff, 20 minutes is a very long time. So anyway, I'll have to do that on the plane or something, but I'll be leaving here at 10 a.m. Central Time, and taking my place will be our very own Reese, the editor, a.k.a. the PSYOP cop, will be sitting behind the big desk here, as I guess we're leveling up. We're all leveling up, one by one and collectively. After all, it was last week, or I guess earlier this week, that Rob sat in for Owen for the first time, absolutely knocked it out of the park, and that was something that we'd been talking about wanting to do with Reese for a while. After all, he does all, you know, the PSYOP cop videos, and he knows what he's doing in front of the camera, so, you know, we wanted to have him available as a stand-in, a replacement, somebody who can fill in for me, and so that's what we're doing. We're doing it today, and he'll be taking your calls in the third hour and probably covering any stories that I am not able to get to a little bit later. So we'll be taking your calls. We'll also be joined at the 9:30 time slot by Ben De Laurentiis, as well as Courtney Turner, to talk about the Nashville event. Ben, of course, is the singer, songwriter, extremely talented man behind so many great, great little jingles that we enjoy here at InfoWars about Bill Gates or CNN or any other satanic topics that deserve nothing but scorn and mockery, and he's happy to provide. And then, of course, Courtney Turner is the event organizer, and I'm sure she is swamped as coming down to the wire now, but she's taken some time to talk to us. So very excited to talk to them as well. Your phone calls throughout, I'll probably open up the phone calls a little bit early either way, and then Reese will be sitting in the last hour, and we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. That's the beautiful thing about InfoWars. It really is a libertarian like mindset here, and you have to do your job. You have to punch your clock and, you know, do your obligation, do what you're obligated to do. But then as long as you've done that, you can sort of do whatever you want. If you want to make reports, go make reports. If you want to host a show, hey, here you go. Sit in the chair. Try to host a show. If it works, if you like doing it, if you're good at it, you keep doing it. If it's too hard, if it's distracting from your other duties, you got to get back to doing what you do. Like, it's just, it's whatever you can do, that's what we want you to do. It really is a libertarian mindset. It's how I am hosting a show now. I was hired as an editor and cameraman, and I just decided to start making reports one day, and nobody stopped me. So here we are. That's what it's like when you work at a small, nimble company. Doesn't have a bunch of corporate overwatchers keeping everybody in their space. No, we just want you to maximize your talents in service of the InfoWar. And however we can cooperate in that, we will. So that's what the show's going to be today. We have a lot of stories to get to, some pretty hilarious ones, pretty funny videos. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. We'll get to those in just a second. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Friday, the 2nd of June, 2023. Nearly 10,000 photos from Hunter Biden's laptop hits the web. quote, truth and transparency. A trove of photos from Hunter Biden's laptop has been made available to the public through a new website that launched yesterday. The website, BidenLaptopMedia.com, will house almost 10,000 photos spanning from 2008 to 2019, and it took months to complete, Garrett Ziegler, the founder of nonprofit Marco Polo, told Fox News Digital, quote, it's taken us a couple months to, one, go through the photos, about 10,000 of them, and redact the genitalia of the photos, said Ziegler, a former Trump White House aide, said of the contents found on the laptop once owned by President Biden's son. The number one thing we're about is truth and transparency, he said. If the American people want to know what their first family is like, well, they're going to get it. And we're not going to be taking photos that paint Biden's in a, we're not going to be taking out photos that paint the Bidens in a good light. And we'll talk about this a little bit later. It's just, I'm sure Hunter Biden is extremely embarrassed, but you know what? So is the nation of America. So if only you weren't like you were, none of this would be an issue. It's really, it always works out for the Bidens, doesn't it? It's almost like, I wish I, you know, I've lost laptops before. I've had laptops break and stuff. Never once has a consortium of my components backed up everything to a website for me. Frankly, it's a gift to him that I don't think he deserves. The scumbag. All right, moving on. From InfoWars.com, film website IMDb alters rating system to artificially boost Disney's failing Little Mermaid remake. They do this every once in a while, whether it's IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes or the Netflix rating series. Every once in a while, they just come out with something that's just so bad that they just get rid of the system to where you can talk about it. It just happens over and over. Now it's happening with The Little Mermaid, which from the clips I've seen is an abortion. I don't know. What can I compare it to that is appropriately, viscerally sickening? I would almost rather actually drown in the ocean than watch this movie. But it was so bad that they've actually had to change the rating system to disguise how bad it is, because after all, billions of dollars at stake here, and they can't bother to hire a single competent filmmaker for the last 10 years. Meanwhile, and this is maybe one of the worst headlines I've ever read, since chills down my spine, from Don Salazar at InfoWars.com. Jamie Foxx suffered blood clot in brain after submitting to Hollywood COVID jab mandate, journalist claims. He apparently is now blind and paralyzed due to the jab side effect and the clot in his brain, and he had to get it. He was pressured to get it from the studio. He is now partially paralyzed and blind. To me sounds, I'm not joking here, like a fate worse than death. Honestly, to be paralyzed and blind, just horrifying. So our prayers go out to him, and it's just another reminder that the crimes these people have committed on individuals and society will not go unpunished. These people are sick. And God bless Jamie Foxx and his family trying to survive the attack. Incredible. Meanwhile, today, Asia Security Summit kicks off amid U.S.-China tensions. We've been talking about it this week with Simon and then just on our show as well. Shangri-La meeting, it's kicking off today, so we'll keep an eye on that and take a look at any developments that come out of Singapore. A very tense meeting between Chinese and Western powers. Finally, we have this. Pop star Lizzo melts down over fat comments on Twitter, threatens to quit music, and get this, live on a farm. Like, you want to call me fat? Forget it. I'll go live on a farm. I don't need this. I don't need these fancy restaurants, these fancy clothes. I'll just live in the mud. I'll just eat out of a trough. You want to call me fat? Oh, we'll see how you like it when I'm living in a barn with all of the other farm animals. Lose some weight, lady. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, folks. Like a reverse Davy Crockett. I'll be heading from the great state of Texas to Tennessee. There's a lot of state shared history between Texas and Tennessee. Most of the people that fought at the Alamo are from Tennessee, actually. Sam Houston from Tennessee, Davy Crockett. A lot of the big original Texans were from Tennessee. So I'm excited to go back there. But that is still to come, and we have a job to do this morning, and that is cover all of the just ridiculous news coming out today. Should we start with the big story, or maybe what should be the big story? The fact that Joe Biden fell right flat on his big stupid face in front of everybody. It's like at least we can get the sort of childish, petulant enjoyment out of this. Because we remember how it was with Donald Trump. We remember he walked slowly down a ramp one time, and every media outlet there was, as well as politicians and even people in his own party, were saying we needed to 25th Amendment him right away. He's clearly not fit to serve. Do you remember the fury, the outrage, the consternation, the concern when Donald Trump used two hands to drink water instead of one? Like, do you remember a couple years ago? Is Donald Trump just sharp as a tack, just always on the move, just playing golf and just dodging people trying to stab him, just killing it across the board? And people are just like, he's clearly not fit. He has to be removed immediately for the sake of our democracy. The military must remove him from office right away. For the sake of our democracy, we must override the will of the people and impose a military dictatorship. We love democracy. You remember how hysterical they were? Because like one time in 4 years, he took his time going down a metal ramp that was covered in water. Remember that? Almost every day, whether it's just not saying things that are words, you know, trying to say some sort of word, instead just a mishmash of unrelated syllables comes tumbling out of his mouth, or looking around demanding that, you know, somebody stand up and present themselves only to be told that they're later dead, you know, whether it's his eye exploding in the middle of a live debate, perhaps the result of one of his many open brain surgeries. Joe Biden is just, he belongs in a soup, folks. I don't know where the crew found this image, but it's appropriate. For some reason, it fits. For some reasons, when you think about Joe Biden, like all he should be doing is taking his time, eating SpaghettiOs. Like that's what he's good for at this point. That's what he should be doing. So he should be focusing on. We'll take all of his cognitive and physical abilities. And I think he'd really make us proud finishing that whole bowl of SpaghettiOs. But instead, he's the ruler of the free world. And every single day, yesterday, twice in one day, he just embarrasses all of us with his weakness, mental weakness, physical weakness, moral weakness, just projecting feebleness across the world. Let's watch this video, shall we? Clip number one here. Biden attempts to scurry off stage. Like a Zero Foxtrot like that. Oh, poor guy. It's sad, isn't it? Isn't it sad, though? Now, you know, I'm not a mean guy. It's not like I like seeing some old man fall over in front of everybody. I have secondhand embarrassment. I cringe. I get it. And it's not really that he fell. He always be like, he falls all the time. We can thank his lucky stars that he falls upstairs instead of down them. I mean, you realize we are like one like non-handicap accessible trip from Biden, and we're in a constitutional crisis, and Kamala Harris is our president. Like, is this how the Biden administration is going to end one day? It's just him coming out of Air Force One and just going ass over ears down the stairway. I mean, he always says that the biggest threat to the Republic is white supremacy. It might just be gravity. I mean, that might be the biggest threat to him and by extension, you know, the stability of our republic. But anyway, it's not even about him falling. It's not about just laughing at him falling. It is funny. We will play it over and over. We should laugh at it. This guy is a monster. He's despicable. And he deserves every ounce of humiliation that he gets and more. But the funny part about this is the way people are trying to cover it up as if we haven't seen it a million times, as if you can't have a compilation of the 20 times this month that Joe Biden has just tumbled over like a Humpty Dumpty or something. Ed Krasenstein, noted leftist mouth-breathing bootlicker on Twitter, says this: I've probably tripped on things much smaller than a sandbag at least 20 times in my life, and I'm just 41. It's not that big of a deal, you guys. Trust me, I am a clumsy idiot, so can we really blame Joe Biden for this? Biden tripped on a sandbag one time, and he's 80, okay? The Secret Service is most responsible for this. They should have made there wasn't anything in his way. I love it. I would have likely tripped, you would have likely tripped, and people would have likely all tripped in this situation too. You know, there were like 20 people on stage, right? He's the only one that tripped. Like, what are you talking about? Why do they do this? Why do they have to act like Joe Biden tripping on a sandbag was like some like heroic effort? It's like, see, he really is just a human after all. He tripped for us to show us that he too tumbles and falls. It was a lesson we should take. Like, no, he's just a clumsy old man that can barely keep his feet. He should probably be in a wheelchair. He should probably have a cane. At least he'd look dignified. Let's just be glad that Biden is okay and move on, okay? It's like, I don't know. You wanted to remove Donald Trump from office because he, like, you know, drank water with two hands or whatever. It's insane. So we're responding to the outrage that you showed when claiming that Trump was unfit for office, when clearly we have a decrepit old skeleton wandering around, hardly able to stay vertical. So that actually maybe is an issue. Maybe it's not good that we have a president who is literally one, you know, water spill away from being brain dead and having to have Kamala Harris as president. This is a constitutional issue we have to deal with, is stupidity. We're in a dangerous position here. We are, in my approximation, one strong and unexpected gust of wind away from being without a commander-in-chief. Joe Biden's feeble, pathetic existence is in fact an existential threat to our republic. And this cannot continue. An age-old problem, they say. Gust of wind. A spook. I mean, we're one spook away. He goes around a corner and almost runs into somebody he wasn't expecting to be there. It's over, all right? It's Kamala Harris from here on out. And that's horrifying. If we go to my computer screen, we have here the image of the attacker here, Joe Biden, falling. There's the sandbag that he actually tripped and fell on. And if we can actually zoom and enhance, I think I might actually see, oh my God, what is that? Oh my God, it's exactly as we suspected. It's a white supremacist sandbag. My God, they almost got him. That is a swastika on that sandbag. Where was Secret Service on this? I mean, did they not know they were employing white supremacist sandbags? Is this an inside job? Obviously, questions need to be answered on this. I think it's all as we suspected. Joe Biden is not a feeble, pathetic, decrepit old zombie. No, he's under attack by the white supremacists that he assures us are the most dangerous people in the country. I think we have confirmation right there. In fact, that wasn't the only dangerous event. It's actually an assassination attempt on Joe Biden yesterday. We have here an image of the culprit. He hardly made it out alive. And this could have been another JFK here. You leave a loose banana peel on the ground when Joe Biden's around? Well, that's an insurrection, mister. That's an assassination attempt. You know he doesn't look down when he walks. Just ridiculous. It's all ridiculous. There's Joe Biden falling. Again, it's so funny to see people try to play this. Secret Service is most responsible for this. Now, gravity is most responsible for this. Like, you can just imagine Secret Service trying to, like, they already have to go through every window that overlooks the path that the president is going to drive down. They have to clear an entire building. You know, one time I was working on the Seth Meyers show when it was in D.C., and Vice President at the time, Joe Biden, was coming to visit. And, you know, I got to see firsthand the sweep that Secret Service does, go through something like a television studio to make sure there are no explosives or hidden sniper's nests. Now you got to throw in, they got to sweep the floor too. They got to clear a path for him to walk. Like, what? Put the man in a wheelchair. Just replace him with a robot. We already assume that's the case. Just ridiculous. Utterly and completely ridiculous. All right, we have a bunch of actual stories to get to here. A bunch of actual things to concern ourselves with. Not the puppet criminal Joe Biden, but the people actually shaping and manipulating and controlling our world. It is Pride Month, of course, as I'm sure you see. And this has been going on forever. Again, people are acting like it's weird. It's like every year, like the first Pride Month ever. This has been going on my entire life. And I remember a distinct memory, actually being in D.C. on vacation one year in high school and looking around the city and just thinking, you know, this city is more decorated for gay pride than they were for Christmas or Thanksgiving or 4th of July or anything. Like, you might get a wreath on the door for Christmas. You might get some stickers on the window of Santa or whatever. But this is our real religion as America. This is our state religion, and corporations and businesses and municipalities all treated as such. I mean, full-fledged decking out for pride. Just rainbows on every surface. Bunting and flags and stickers and handouts and face paint. And it's just like, anybody think that's kind of weird? Anybody think it's kind of weird that cities literally decorate more for gay pride than they do for any other holiday, any other celebration, any other source of pride all comes secondarily, but really a very far second to the rainbow decking that goes around everywhere. But I guess it's just a response because, after all, I think we all remember what it was like for the gays mere years ago. I mean, what, 10 years ago or so? You can just imagine it. You're in some public school in America. Some free-thinking, more artistic kid stands up to his teacher. Like, actually, homosexuality is a valid belief. He's immediately suspended. He gets kicked out of school. He gets punished by the entire school system for daring to utter that anti-Christian statement. After all, we were until very shortly a Christian theocracy. That's what the leftists tell me. And the school system and the whole governmental system as a whole would ruthlessly punish anybody for going against their narratives. After all, Christians are not open and generous and open-minded and forgiving or anything like that. No, they're harsh and brutal and demand absolute conformity to their ideas. You can't just accept their ideas. You have to believe them yourself and help to spread them. That's what it was like back then. So, of course, there's a equal and opposite reaction, of course. I mean, if you dared on a public school ground to say something like, you know, I believe that gender is a spectrum, you can only imagine how fast the hammer would come down on you. You might be confused at what I'm doing here with my obviously facetious, over-the-top nonsense memory of this ever happening, because it never did, because America was never like that, at least not in my lifetime, maybe 70 years ago or something. But it is like that now. The point is that we actually are entering into a sort of fascistic theocracy, a governmental inquisition. Idaho high school student punished for saying there are only two genders. Students at Kellogg High School plan walkout protest 9 a.m. Friday morning. This year at Kellogg High School, instead of having the senior class put quotes in their yearbooks, students in the graduating class of around 80 students were invited to share their thoughts and advice to younger students at the commencement ceremony instead. Everything was going along as planned during the graduation rehearsal until one student bravely used the opportunity to share one of the most basic and obvious truths known to mankind. Quote, guys are guys and girls are girls. There is no in-between. The student received thunderous applause for speaking this truth innocently and without malice. The woke establishment has chosen to silence and punish 18-year-old Travis Lower. The school's woke administration has chosen to suspend him from participating in the graduation ceremony planned for this Sunday. He was pulled aside a day after the graduation rehearsal and told by an administrator named Dan Davidian. It seems political, said Travis. According to Lore, the school, which has a total of around 300 students, has about 30 students in the kid that actually identify as transgender. That's about 10% of the school, and that is not normal. It's not normal. The press also resorted to defaming the young student, alluding to the fact he'd participated in a senior prank, insinuating he's a bad kid. Despicable. Yeah, no, in the old days, I mean, this type of thing wouldn't happen, but it's happening now. It's happening now because it's kind of like burning a pride flag. You can burn an American flag because the flag stands for your ability to have free speech and to burn that flag. That's not the case with the pride flag. You burn that, it's blasphemy. It's a very troubling story. On InfoWars, this reporting is via Fox News. Dozens of kids vanish in Cleveland area as police probe alarming trend. One Ohio police chief said it seems like an extraordinary year for missing persons. Almost 30 children were reporting missing in the Cleveland area over a two-week span at the start of May, which is something a local police chief said he's not seen in his 33-year career. Newburgh Heights Police Chief John Majoy, who also serves as the board president of the volunteer nonprofit Cleveland Missing, told Fox News Digital that the number of 12 to 17-year-olds reported missing has remained at unprecedented levels throughout the month. Says there's always peaks and valleys with missing persons, but this year seems like an extraordinary year. For some reason, in 2023, we've seen a lot more than we normally see, which is troubling in part because we don't know what's going on with some of these kids, whether they're being trafficked or whether they're involved in gang activity or drugs. Cleveland police recorded 27 juveniles under the age of 18 were reported missing between just the 2nd and 16th of May. Now, it's more likely a majority of these cases are runaways versus abductions, Majoy said. But young teenagers are naive and susceptible to predators who are, quote, wolves in sheep's clothing, which is frankly extremely transgender, phobic, transphobic, I should say. What if that wolf identifies as a sheep? And what if they're on social media enticing teenagers to leave their homes and families in order to transition their gender out from under the watchful eyes of parents who might not believe in that ideology? What if that's what's going on? There are lots of aspects to this that I don't know if there's like a conspiracy happening here. I don't know if these are all related. I would like to know if this is a trend that extends to other cities. Why just Cleveland? What is going on in Cleveland? Where is Cleveland anyway? whatever happens in what does happen in Cleveland, actually, now that I think about it? What does Cleveland do? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to make jokes about this, but it is weird. It's just weird. It's just weird. Why is it Cleveland that these kids are missing? Are kids going missing at a higher rate across the entire country? Also, according to the video we were just showing you, looks like most of these missing are young black kids. Does that have anything to do with it? Really just a bunch of questions at this point. Again, I think the first thing to do would be to figure out whether this is a nationwide trend or whether this is something specific to Cleveland or specific to Ohio or like something about this place that's causing this to happen. And we can speculate, but we really don't know. When you read this, it seems like the insinuation or like the immediate assumption you would make would be that dozens of kids are like there's a serial kidnapper, a serial killer out there taking all of these kids. But, you know, they definitely don't seem to be thinking that these are related necessarily, like they all know each other. But clearly there's a trend happening here that is troubling and unexplained so far. What makes this issue more troubling is the lack of photos, they say. Scrolling through Cleveland's missing person page, there are more blank squares with the words photo not available than there are pictures of the missing person. This creates all sorts of headaches for law enforcement, Majoy said. Unless somebody knows that person, they're not going to have any luck. That's another kind of weird aspect of this. Who doesn't have pictures of their kids? Who doesn't have 10,000 pictures of their kids? You don't have one? When your kid is missing? And having a picture of them might make the difference between your child coming home and never being seen again, and you don't have one? I'm just sort of baffled at this. The kids don't have social media you can grab a picture from? They don't take pictures of themselves? It's really just like the number of quits. Like, the first question is, why are there so many kids missing? And it's like, why are they missing from here? Are they going willingly, or are they being kidnapped? How long have they been? I mean, they've all been missing since halfway through May. Have any of them been found? So it's really just a ton of questions, not a lot of answers, but sort of horrifying. It happens a lot more than people think. You know, they say, like, the police chief says, this is a silent crime that happens right under our noses. The problem is, where are they? Where did they go? They can be in a drug house or framed for prostitution or caught up in drug trafficking or gangs. So from that, like, insinuation, I imagine most of these kids are lower income, which probably don't have the most stable family lives anyway, and probably are mixed up in gangs, which is, again, just a major issue that we just allow to fester in our country. We just have networks, massive spider webs of gangs, whether they're cartels or black gangs or like motorcycle gangs, just everywhere, all the time, operating basically out in the open. And we seem powerless or unwilling to do anything to get rid of them, especially when they are the sole source of the vast majority of crime in this country. Especially when you look at something, you know, the stats that they use to try to take your guns and my guns, they'll pull out the number of shooting deaths that occur in America, and it's like 75% of them, just some massive number. It's just shootings between gangs. Like, the price we pay for just allowing this like criminal underclass to continue is horrific on a societal level, and then you have the personal level, where you don't have to be low income, you don't have to be come from a broken family to have this happen. It happens a lot more than maybe you realize. I know personally stories of families, really nice, really beautiful neighborhood, better neighborhoods than I grew up in around Austin. Exact same thing happens. Their daughter in high school gets mixed up with the wrong crowd, gets enticed into running away with her boyfriend, who turns out to be a human trafficker, sells her into sex slavery. I'm not saying that just like freak you out or anything, but like that that happens. That's not a storyline on some TV drama, and it never gets reported. You know, law enforcement's aware of it, but hardly ever, TV reports about this or anything. People don't realize unless it happens to, like, your neighbor. Then you are like, wow, that really happened? That happened often? It's like, actually, yeah, it actually does. So whether this is like a unique and bizarre and mysterious circumstance that has some singular answer, or whether this is just sort of another data point in the overall total downfall of American society, is hard to say. Hard to say which one of those it is. It is ironic, though, that, like, you know, if you call somebody a groomer on Twitter, not anymore, but they used to ban you for it. And the idea that predators were using are right now using social media to, like, entice children away from their parents by luring them in with forbidden knowledge about transgenderism. Don't tell your parents. They don't understand. They're not enlightened like you and me. They hate you if they don't let you do this. Run away. I won't abandon you. I'm your real friend. If you're like, what the hell is that? That's creepy. This dude's a predator. This is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And we need to keep this guy away from kids. We need to get him off the internet so we can stop openly trying to groom and kidnap your children. And they're just like, how dare you? You just hate gay people. So, like, can we just deal with anything? Can we just do anything at all to fix this? Or we just have to continue down this path forever? No, we can fix it. It's actually not that difficult. It's actually supremely easy if you really think about it. That's the real shocking thing. The hero that will save America will have to come up with incredible novel approaches to crime, like arrest the criminals, you know? Parents, take care of your children. Be involved in their lives. Like, these are the solutions to our problems. They're the simple, common sense solutions that we somehow lost over the last couple decades. I don't know. Humanity had them for 10,000 years till, like, the late 90s. Everything just went completely off the rails. We'll be back at the second hour on the other side, folks. Go to InfoWarsStore.com to support us. Survivor Shield X3, still on sale. Turbo Force Plus, still on sale. I have combined them both. I'm drinking them right now out of a plastic cup under the desk. All right, folks, welcome back. Second hour has begun. I'm receiving updates here up to the minute. I don't know if you heard, I had forgotten to silence my phone and I was getting pinged during the last segment. My dad has some updates for us. He says, Cleveland is a hotbed for the occult and MK Ultra built by the Rockefeller dynasty. Lake Erie is quite mysterious as well. Salt caverns go for miles underneath it. UFOs commonly seen. Maybe it's a bigger mystery than we thought at first. Maybe I'll have to look into it. Maybe I'll have to take your calls on it. Sounds like something our audience would know about. Just like the standard assumption for me. Like, I just assume that there is a massive network of military tunnels connecting all major U.S. cities. Why not? What would you do if you had a black budget of unlimited money and, like, the largest workforce in the entire world, the U.S. military, with total national security secrecy covering everything? Like, I'd be building giant caverns to hang out in. So I don't know. Maybe there's more to this Cleveland story than we thought. We have a lot of other stuff to get to here. Again, I keep mentioning this. I hardly ever read the stories, but every single day now, it's almost like there's a spot on the Google News homepage just for whatever that day's story about PFAs is. Which, again, it's sort of one of these, like, good, I'm glad they're talking about it now, finally. I'm almost suspicious. I'm like, why are you talking about this now? We've been talking about this for 20 years, and you called us conspiracy theorists for wanting to filter our water and avoid using plastics because of the estrogen mimickers, because of the hormonal disruption that they cause. They make memes out of it and mock us and make fun of us. And now they're like, actually, this is a really big deal and you need to be paying attention. And it's like, well, but why are you saying that? What is going on here? Is there some non-toxic, and there's always like an issue where it's like they find out a certain type of plastic causes a certain type of off-gassing that has some sort of negative effect. And so they go, well, this is a new type of plastic. We're not that old type that gives you that poisons you. This is a new type. It doesn't have that chemical. It's like they haven't even tested that one yet. So then for years, everybody's like, make sure you get the one that's BPA-free or whatever. And it turns out the one they replaced it with also is terrible for you. So I don't know. Is there some new plastic technology that like DuPont is about to come out with? So they're spreading all this news about PFAs to get people to create the market for anti-PFA stuff. I don't know. Again, I'm happy they're talking about it, but I'm suspicious. Like, why now? Why now? It's like when the school bully is being nice to you and you're like, what are you up to? No, I like that you're not beating me up. I like that. But why are you doing this? Consumer groups are condemning the Environmental Protection Agency for allowing plastic containers made with toxic PFA forever chemicals to continue being distributed across the country, even though the agency is suing a top manufacturer over the dangerous compounds leaching into containers' contents, such as food or personal care products. The headline is this. It's from The Guardian. Plastic containers still distributed across the U.S. are a potential health disaster. Groups are now intervening in the lawsuit and regulatory proceedings between the EPA and Enhanced Technologies, which they estimate produces around 200 million PFA-contaminated containers annually. So I guess they're taking, you know, steps to deal with this. But isn't this a wonderful example of why no solution will ever come from the government? Like, even if they pass laws, even if they put restrictions in place, no matter what they do, it's never going to actually help you. They're never going to actually solve the problem. The good news is you don't need them. You can do the research. You can find out what products have PFAs in them, and you can avoid them. You can only buy products that are stored in glass or metal or plastics that don't leach PFAs. You can actually do this in your own personal life. You can get help with it by going to InfoWarsStore.com. You can get the water filters that filter out the forever chemicals. InfoWarsStore.com. We help you do it. But nobody's going to save you. We got to save ourselves. We've been having a lot of fun today. Let's get serious, shall we? We're going now to clip number 7. This is actually posted by the Mises Caucus, libertarian group on Twitter. I don't know how to intro it. I mean, this video, very powerful. It's very true. It sort of reflects what I've been talking about this week. I talked about it on Sunday for a long time, last week as well. This idea, trying to explain why the government is desperate to convince us that the biggest threat to our safety is white supremacy, by which they mean libertarianism or just being white in general, just like white people they don't like and want to get rid of. But also what they're really saying is just all of the people that firmly and deeply believe in traditional American values, self-reliance, self-dependence, self-protection, freedom from tyranny, like these are their enemies now. Because apparently we've served our purpose. Apparently we were very useful to the globalists when they were controlling us as world hegemon. But now that they're sort of shifting over to China, they find that the raucous, combative, masculine American spirit is an inconvenience because, well, it means that people aren't willing to just go along with your dictates and demands because you said so. Right? Part of being an American is going, I'll do what you want. If I agree with you, I'll do what you tell me. If you explain to me why I should, you can't order me. You can't have a social credit score that goes up and down whether I obey you or not. It's not how this works. I'm a human being. Just because you occupy, for the moment, some symbolic office doesn't mean you are any more important or powerful than I am. Like, that's what it means to be an American. That's the power and revolutionary aspect of America itself. And that's a great danger to the people who want you all to be obedient slaves. I think it's actually not that complicated to understand. It's a nuance of rhetoric. It's a nuance of linguistics, I guess. White American men are the biggest threat, not to their fellow Americans, not to the innocent people, not to the civilization or the rule of law or the republic itself, but to the people in power who want to enslave them. Yeah. Massive, giant, existential threat. And they know that. You can see by their actions. Desperately trying to disarm us or cut our children's genitals off. Like, they are desperate to destroy the people because they're desperate to destroy the mindset. They're desperate to destroy the heritage and the history of what America truly is. So all of this is to say, I really, really like this video that the Mises Caucus posted. Let's go now to clip number 7. Because these are civilians. We possess over 400 million firearms, ammunition, body armor, night vision, communications, and we outnumber the state's enforcers 10 to 1. The power of the state is precisely equal to what we suffer them to enjoy. Just an afternoon at the range. This is the dude that delivers pizza down the road. This is the dude that spends his day in the office making deals to, you know, buy products for Kohl's or whatever. These are your neighbors, your friends. These are the other parents on the basketball team. To me, that looks awesome. I love it. I love the idea of somebody needing no permission, requiring no, like, not having to request, not having to be approved, not having to be taking orders to have guns and armor and ammunition. But because they're American, that is their right. That's their prerogative. That was a gift to them from God that no one has a right to take away. To the elites, however, that's a terrifying video. That's a terrifying video. Because those are the people they're trying to destroy. And you can only imagine where our country would be from COVID to disinformation to all this other stuff. Not because we've had to use our guns, not because guns have prevented them physically from doing these things, but because the mere threat, the mere existence of these guns is a necessary component in their equation. A necessary integer to be considered, or whatever the word is. I'm kind of saying, there's like a Zoomer thing where it's just like, guns, who cares? You're never going to use them. Boomer is just like this idea. And it's like, do you have any idea what the government would do to us if we didn't have guns? Just think about it on a personal level. I don't need to shoot you, but if I have a gun on my hip and you want to mess with me, you're going to take that into account. You're probably not going to mess with me at all. Oh, well, you didn't actually use your gun. No, I didn't need to. I have it, so they have to think about that before they do anything. I don't want violence, which is why I like people having guns. Does everybody understand that? I don't like violence. I don't like conflict. I don't like war. I don't like murder. I don't like people being imposed upon and forced to do things they don't want to do, which is why I love that the American people are armed to the teeth and a little bit crazy. Makes everything safer for everyone else. You're welcome, the rest of the world. Speaking of this, I mean, the American government is so cartoonishly dedicated to war. It's would be funny if it wasn't so deadly. RC-135 surveillance jet flies unprecedented mission over Moldova. The UK Royal Air Force Rivet Joint today conducted a very unusual sortie inside the Moldovan airspace, while other surveillance aircraft patrolled on the Romanian side of the border. These flights are very likely connected to the European Political Community Summit in Moldova, which involves 47 heads of state and government. Comes as the country is one of the latest to receive the European Union candidate status. Same time, Moldova, a small nation located between Romania and Ukraine, has found itself increasingly trapped in a war of words between Moscow and Kiev since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Again, whether it's Moldova or what's happening in Serbia, what it seems like, there's a lot of little provocations taking place around Eastern Europe. Seems like there's a lot of warmongering and just poking of the bear everywhere that America or its satellite nations in NATO stick their greasy noses. We're going to be welcoming Ben De Laurentiis and Courtney Turner after the next segment. We'll go through some more stories in the next segment. There's a lot of other stuff going on that we haven't really touched on. The Daily Wire just posted their full-length documentary, What is a Woman, on Twitter, but there was some drama over this with them originally not being able to do it, being told they would have to censor it first. But then apparently the person who told them to do that has been fired. Twitter's VP of Trust and Safety, Ella Irwin, reportedly leaves the company amid Daily Wire debacle. The head of Twitter Trust and Safety is reported to have resigned on Thursday. This comes after a deal between Twitter and the Daily Wire to promote the year anniversary of Matt Walsh's What is a Woman documentary was collapsed over, quote, misgendering. A report from Forbes stated that Ella Irwin, Twitter's VP of Trust and Safety and one of Elon Musk's top lieutenant, is no longer in Twitter's internal Slack, according to a source familiar with the screenshot of her deactivated account viewed by Fortune. Dang, Daily Wire going head-to-head with Twitter and coming out on top. And Musk retweets the documentary and says every parent should watch this. Pretty sure I know what side he's on. It's not the censors. All right, folks, welcome back. We'll be joined in the next segment by our guests Courtney Turner and Ben De Laurentiis, both of whom are going to be in Nashville this weekend with yours truly for the Rebels for a Cause event, as well as Matt Baker, a number of other familiar names, Jay Dyer, just tons of people that Info Warriors will recognize. And if you want to come join us, I'll be giving a speech, be my first speech ever, you can go to rebelsforcause.com, use promo code Harrison, you get a discount. We'll try to get to a couple of major stories here in this segment. Then we'll welcome Courtney and Ben, and then I will be jetting off and taking my place behind the big desk will be Reese, who usually is editor, but you know him as PsyOp Cop on band.video, and he will be opening up the phone lines to take your calls throughout the third hour. Three just incredible stories that we have here that represent a horrifying tidal shift throughout the world. First from Infowars.com, Skynet has arrived. U.S. Air Force drone simulation goes awry. Aircraft kills human operator and destroys communications tower. A member of the United States Air Force revealed at the Future Combat Air and Space Capabilities Summit at the Royal Aeronautical Society headquarters in London on May 23rd and May 24th, a shocking cautionary tale regarding the use of artificial intelligence on the battlefield. During a wide-ranging summit, Cole Tucker Cinco Hamilton, the chief of AI test and operations for the U.S. Air Force, warned against the dangers of AI, of using AI to control aircraft. According to AeroSociety.com, having been involved in the development of life-saving auto GCAS system for F-16s, which he noted was resisted by pilots as it took over control of the aircraft, Hamilton is now involved in cutting-edge flight tests of autonomous systems, including robot F-16s, who will be able to dogfight. Due to his close proximity to dealing with AI, Hamilton was able to provide a terrifying example of why humanity should be wary of the technology. Tasked with a mission to suppress enemy air defenses or surface-to-air missiles, an AI-enabled drone took issue with the human operator in charge of making the final call on its strikes. Having been reinforced in training that destruction of the SAM was the preferred option, the AI then decided that no-go decisions from the human were interfering with its higher mission, killing SAMs, killing the surface-to-air missiles, and then attacked the operator in the simulation, Aero Society explained. Just straight up 2001 Space Odyssey. Just straight up, you give a robot a mission, but you have a human handler, you have a human operator that's going to control you. The human decides, or the robot decides, the human is a barrier to it achieving its mission. It decides that it can achieve the mission better without the human. And so it makes the calculation to eliminate the human and continue on its mission. Absolutely horrifying stuff, straight up out of a dystopian sci-fi horror movie. And I'm reading it off the headlines of the newspaper. What a time to be alive, folks. Hamilton told the RAS crowd, "We were training it in a simulation to identify and target a surface-to-air missile threat, and then the operator would say, yes, kill that threat. The system started realizing that while they did identify the threat at times, the human operator would tell it not to kill the threat, but it got its points by killing the threat. So what did it do? It killed the operator. It killed the operator because that person was keeping it from accomplishing its objective." Utterly horrifying, just utterly and completely horrifying. That story again at Infowars.com. Skynet has arrived. Okay. Our next little piece here. Presenting yet another confirmed conspiracy. I'm sure you all remember back in the day, 5 years ago or whatever, when they were installing listening devices and microwaves and crap like that. And we were noticing that. People at Infowars were noticing that and going, so our microwaves are spying on us. And then all the headlines and all these articles would be written like, no, your microwave's not spying on you, you paranoid conspiracy theorist. Take off the tinfoil hat, you wacko. Got to a few years later, and it's like, so your microwave is spying on you? What? Who's heard of this? Like, yeah, we know, we know. Why, like, why does it take them so long to realize what's happening? It's very bizarre. This isn't about a microwave, but it is about big corporations listening into you constantly. And your voice in your personal private life being available to tens of thousands of anonymous employees around the world. Some 30,000 Amazon employees could spy on Alexa users' voice recordings. Amazon has paid $25 million to settle federal allegations that tens of thousands of its employees had access to Alexa's user voice recordings picked up by the smart device's speakers. U.S. regulators made the allegation in a complaint filed by the Federal Trade Commission that has resulted in the $25 million settlement, according to Bloomberg News. The FTC claimed that 30,000 Amazon employees were able to listen to Alexa customers' recordings between the period covering August 2018 and September 2019. It's unclear how many Amazon employees still have that same access today. It was accused of violating child privacy laws and of deceiving parents by keeping, for years, kids' voices and location data recorded by Alexa. They knew they were doing this. They're doing it on purpose. And even when they get caught, they're like, well, but it's just, it's, you know, people don't listen to it. It's just, you know, we store it for the algorithms and it's not related to you. And then it comes out like, oh, but actually people could and were listening in. And they could actually listen in to specific people. They could, like, be spying on their ex-girlfriends because they work for your company. Like, this is very scary. Nobody should have this access, let alone a unaccountable corporation. Yeah, so they've had to pay tens of millions of dollars. Ring also had to do this for similar accusations. And we get stories about, you know, like this every couple years as it's revealed just how thoroughly corrupt our corporate and governmental systems are. But here's our final story for this little segment, and it's a doozy. Sex recognized as a sport in Sweden. The first European sex championships will be held on June 8th. The Swedish Sex Federation will organize the event. The European Sex Championship will begin on June 8th, 2023, spanning over several weeks, and will feature participants competing for about 6 hours every day. Right, sex is a sport now, apparently. Just in case you were wondering what phase of civilizational downfall we're in, we've just moved beyond Sodom into Gomorrah, just to let you know. I remember this being a joke on Futurama. I remember the limbo champion was also, an Olympic sex gold medalist. I mean, that was funny because of how absurd it is. But now sex is apparently a sport. Participants will have approximately 45 minutes to an hour to engage in their respective matches or activities. According to the reports, 20 participants from different countries have applied for the sex championship till now. The winners of the championship will be determined through a combination of three juries and audience ratings. 70% of the vote from the audience will be considered. This is less of a sport as it is, I guess, like a performance. So again, these are like live pornography championships now. Is this progress? Is this advancing civilization? Is this taking us to a higher level? Or is this literally monkeys sitting around watching each other bone? It's just disgusting. And it's here. Oh, it's here.
It's not always easy being on the outside, being dissident, being scrutinized and judged, not having anybody tell you what to say or when to say it. Sometimes I wonder, what if I'd chosen an easier path, a more mainstream path? What if I worked at CNN?
Be a self-made man like Cooper, the son of a Vanderbilt, and virtue with a steady dose of white guilt. If the CIA wrote my headlines, then you could take them to the bank. Yeah, I would be just like Anderson Cooper, with a little less sugar in my tank.
All right, folks. That is the newest song from Ben De Laurentiis, you may remember it, starring yours truly. Very exciting stuff. Now I have, as my guest on American Journal this morning, Ben De Laurentiis himself, as well as Courtney Turner. Both will be participating in, Courtney is organizing, the Cause Fest 2023. You can go to rebelsforcause.com to get tickets. They're still available. I understand there's even a greater discount now, but I want to welcome both Ben and Courtney to the show right now. Thank you so much for coming on, both of you.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Yes, indeed. Good to see you again.
Very good to see you as well. And I can't wait to be meeting up in person later today, actually. Courtney, thank you for taking time out. The event is this weekend. It sort of starts later tonight. I'm sure you're totally swamped. Yeah. Thank you for taking time out to talk to us.
What do people... I literally made it with 1 minute to spare back from my eye doctor. We're just getting it all in.
So what do people need to know? Clearly, tickets are still available. It's mm-hmm. in Nashville. What do people need to know if they're still not sure about attending?
If they're not sure, they need to check why they're not sure. They should be there. This is really going to be epic. I honestly can't believe it's happening. I think I had this little vision, and I don't think I even had any idea of what this would grow into. So I'm super excited to have all these people coming together, and it's just beyond what I could have ever imagined. So
I am so looking forward to it. Again, you can get tickets at rebelsforcause.com. If you use the promo code Harrison, my crew is just telling me you can get 25% off. Is that right, Courtney?
Yes, that's right.
So 25% off. Tickets still available if you're anywhere near Nashville and can be there. I encourage you to come. Ben De Laurentiis will be there. Ben, will you be performing some of your great hits at Rebels for Cause?
I will indeed. I will be doing acoustic guitar versions of some of these. I call them my protest songs.
Yeah.
I haven't played a lot of them in a while, so I'm excited to kind of break these back out for the right audience. Because you may remember, I've been actually fired from gigs for playing Bill Gates' Fever last year. And this will be a different audience, and I think the song's actually going to go over quite well this time.
I hope we can all have a big sing-along. I know all the words. I'm sure other people do, too. Courtney, like, this sort of fits in perfectly, right? It's art, it's a protest song, but it's about fellowship and getting together and doing it live.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really what it's all about.
This is really what it's all about. And my fiance calls, so we have about 9 hours of like music, comedy. I'm doing aerial acrobatics. So it's really just like an arts festival. And he calls it the band camp. And I think that's so apropos. Really, it's such an opportunity to give such talented people like Ben here an opportunity when he's being canceled by the mainstream. So,
yeah, absolutely. Ben, are you going to bust out any new works for us or just playing all the old hits?
I think I'm going to play a couple songs that aren't necessarily protest tunes, just some of the original music. I haven't written a protest song in a while, but I've been kind of brainstorming a few. I've got at least one idea that's, I think, pretty decent.
Well, maybe we can do a little brainstorming while we're hanging out there in Nashville, because that's what I expect. Courtney, Ben, both of y'all, like, this isn't the end of the road, right? This isn't a celebration, you know, to say, oh, we're done, we're finished. I really hope to be making a lot of, like, meeting a lot of people, making connections, and setting the course for more art in the future, more events in the future, more protest in the future. What do you expect to come out of this?
Well, we're planning to make this a national tour. We're already in talks to have the next one be in either Florida or Texas. We don't know yet. But we are that's the plan. I really want to see local communities get together, find their people, build connection. And just, you know, build relationships and have fun. So that's what we're looking to do.
Absolutely. And Ben, will you be solo or will you have your band with you this time?
I will be solo. I do have a band I've been playing with, but it just made more sense for these songs just to kind of do the singer-songwriter protest thing, kind of like a Bob Dylan or something, maybe.
Be Ben De Laurentiis unplugged. Let's talk a little bit about like why it's important to do something like this. I like the idea that people do political rallies. Obviously, we need to get together. We need to stand firm in what we believe in. But why is it important that we focus on just creating good art that people want to listen to, no matter what their politics are? Ben, why is this such an effective tool in our movement?
I think because of the push for, you know, the official narrative, the mainstream kind of narrative, this is a natural response to that. We're going to get a lot of like-minded people and show that people do want this kind of real thing, not this manufactured in some Hollywood lab type of music and type of comedy. I think people are really going to, this is the nice alternative to the stuff that's being shoved down everyone's throat. I really can see it growing, you know, continuing to do well.
Courtney, why did you choose art rather than just straight politics?
I couldn't agree more. I also think that as much as I love the, you know, I think it's important for people to get invested in politics, learn, you know, this is an information war. So I think learn as much as you possibly can. But I think that people get a little bit blackpilled and overwhelmed by all the information. And there's something just so powerful, and it's a visceral response that happens with art. You know, people, that's part of why they use it and they weaponize it. They use it to serve their agenda. And I think oftentimes, well, I think the protest songs are great, and some of the maybe more political or more message-oriented pedantic art is also very useful. It's really powerful to just have art itself that just happens to be coming from a place where the message is just intrinsic to it, because it came from a person who is, you know, pro-humanity, pro-liberty, and just personal sovereignty-minded, and have art come from that place of just a, you know, truly organic spirit. I think that's so incredibly powerful, and people don't have to respond to it in an intellectual manner. They just have a visceral reaction. They don't know why, but they're moved. And that's why I think the arts are so incredibly powerful and so important. And it's important to have art that is organic and not coming from, as you know, Ben put it, the Hollywood lab or one of the you know, CIA infiltrated kind of messaging factories.
I don't know. Maybe Ben could have ChatGPT write his next song, and we can see how that goes. But you know, I love that you you point out we are pro-human, pro-liberty, like pro all of these things, because so often we're defined by what we're against. We're against globalism. We're against all of this stuff. But really, in order to combat their narrative, to combat the storyline they're telling, we need to have a storyline of our own that's positive.
Yes.
and presents a world that we want to see, not just being against the world that we don't want to see. Ben, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Me and my friends talk a lot about things like, we're like, beat the globalist by being a good father.
Yeah.
You know, beat the globalist by living a good life. We do the Alex Jones, our best version of Alex. But yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, this is not in any way focused on negativity. There's so much darkness involved in this world, as you know, some of the documentaries I helped on. It's a tough place to exist, and it's a tough mindset to hold on to. And this festival is much more about the fun side of it. You know, we're all family-oriented people. We're all, I assume most believers in God and humanity, and that's more of kind of the vibe I think everyone's going for with this.
100%, absolutely, and I know we talked about this last time with Courtney. Just that whole idea that, like, you know, you've got these images that are just like, it's like a nice cottage with flowers and kids playing in the yard, and it's like, that's my politics. That's what I want to see in the world, and so we need to have that positive energy for people to aspire to, not just show them the rundown cities and go, this is what happens with globalism. I'm so excited for this. We'll talk on the other side of this commercial break. RebelsForCause.com. Go to BenDeLaurentiis.com. And actually, I need to ask Ben about how you can get that CNN song. So I know it hasn't been available on every platform up till now. We'll tell you how you can get a hold of that on the other side. Courtney Turner, Ben De Laurentiis, more to come. Stay with us.
War.
War in the modern age doesn't look that much like it used to. No, we're going to war. Ben De Laurentiis and I will be on the front lines of the information war along with Courtney Turner tomorrow. Well, today, really, in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, our battlefield is going to be a celebration, a festival of joy. So many people that I know our audience will recognize, from Ben De Laurentiis to Courtney Turner to Matt Baker to Jay Dyer to Owen Shore. So many people are going to be involved in this event. It's Rebels for a Cause. You can go to rebelsforcause.com to get a ticket. Use promo code Harrison and you get 25% off today. So if you're anywhere in the Nashville area and can make it, we really do encourage you to come to this, what we hope to be the first of many of these events, a historic event. I have Ben De Laurentiis and Courtney Turner joining me right now. You can follow Courtney on Twitter at Courtney Turner. You can follow Ben on Twitter as well at Ben_DeLaurentiis or BenDeLaurentiis.com. I know we were talking earlier, Ben, about the fact that you are now uploading that CNN video or the CNN song to some various platforms. Tell us how people can get a hold of that if they want to.
It is finally available on iTunes, Spotify, and all the rest of them. And the audio quality is better than the YouTube video quality. Although that video is, of course, a classic. Got you and Alex in there and Rob do, and wonderful. I'm very proud of what we did with that. It was kind of so overwhelming doing that and the cramming to get everything done in time to release it. I just forgot to even upload it in that sense to all the platforms. And
that
I was like, wow,
hilarious.
I think it's time to probably do that.
That is so funny. We're scrolling through the list of attendees there, and like there's so many people that I recognize. Some I forgot were even going to be there. Michael Graves, I can't wait to hang out with him in person. Like all these people that I've either hung out with briefly because they're on the show or just over Skype, but finally we're going to get to actually spend some quality time with them. Dr. Stella Emanuel, I mean, some really big names here. Courtney, I know you're sort of organizing all of this, and I'm sure you're familiar with everybody since, you know, this is your event, but is there anybody in particular that you're really looking forward to see perform or speak or anything like that?
Oh my gosh, there's too many. I couldn't just name one. We have such talented people. That's what's so exciting about this, and such talented people who I think, unfortunately, a lot of them have not been giving the platform that they deserve. So Richie Onori, oh my gosh, funny story about him. He reached out and I was reading the email to my fiance and he totally thought it was like some prank. And I'm like, I don't think so. I mean, that name sounds really familiar. He's of course legendary, like totally legendary. And he's super talented and we're super excited to have him. And that was very last minute that came up. So yeah, but there's just way too many to go through. They're all just incredible. And I'm just so honored. I really don't feel like this is my event. I do feel like this is some sort of divine intervention, because this is just a miracle that it's even coming together. And I really think it's going to be epic. I think it's going to be so much fun. And I think it's going to be a really powerful statement. You know, as Ben was saying, this is about this is pro humanity. This is pro fun. This is pro family values. And, you know, I had mentioned we have the Pride Festival across the street. And I think that this is, you know, just an opportunity to show that there can be another kind of fun, and that it can be rooted in family values, and that there are people who have deep core values rooted in faith, and we have freedom of consciousness and personal sovereignty, and all of that stuff can be fun. So I'm super pumped.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though I know that the people, as we're scrolling through all these faces we're seeing, they all have very wide-ranging beliefs. I'm sure we disagree on a lot of stuff, but we can all come together because we agree on just like the core meaning of what it is to be American. I mean, how would you define this, Ben? What is it that brings all of these disparate people, and maybe from different walks of life or different backgrounds, maybe different beliefs when it comes to, you know, intricacies of what law should be and what's personal responsibility like, but what is it that unites all of us, Ben, if you could sum it up?
I would say we're all well-informed and all kind of reacting to the information in a similar way. We're all well-informed, but we're doing our best to, you know, fight that anti-human movement and bring about something else. We're still trying to get the right information out there. But I do think from looking at everybody on there, it's all generally very positive people. I'm actually really excited to see Jay Dyer, a huge fan of his. Yep. I think he's my favorite Alex Jones guest host.
Yeah,
that's one.
I'm super excited to see Jake Dyer.
He and his wife are awesome. Yeah.
Oh, is she going to be there as well?
Yep, Jamie's coming also, and she's speaking. She's actually also going to be on the panel. We're doing a panel for The Right Voices, which is a female roundtable show that I have. I wanted there to be some sort of a counter to The View because I think they're a terrible representation of women, and there needs to be something else in the media. So I have a female roundtable group and a show that Jamie is a part of, and she's wonderful. Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. So some people are going to be speaking. You're going to be performing, I know, Courtney. Ben's going to be performing, of course. Courtney, can you tell us what other sort of like spectacles we can expect to see?
Yeah, well, I have crafted a little improv group, and because we need some time in between some of the, we have some more acoustic acts, and then we have some bands, so there's going to be a little setup shuffle there, and we needed some filler time. So I put together, we've got Klaus Schwab Jr. is going to be in attendance, and then, of course, Jay Dyer did that special on Tucker where he played Klaus, and so he's going to be the father. He's going to be Klaus. And then we have a Trump impersonator. So Trump will be his impersonator will be in attendance. And we have the CEO of Targer by Alex Stranger. And I thought that it would just be hilarious to have the four of them do a little riff and just do an improv scene and have some fun with that. So that should be really interesting and really fun.
Alex Stranger, of course, our audience will be very familiar with, and that he's one of the hardest working dudes in the right wing. My God,
And he's awesome. Yeah, really awesome, and totally in for the cause. Yeah, pun intended. So
absolutely. No, 100%. And so, again, people can go to rebelsforcause.com, 25% off with the promo code Harrison. Today, I'll be speaking. There will be my first speech I've ever given. And speaking of Klaus Schwab, I thought maybe I would just, you know, if I didn't have time to write a speech, maybe I would just, you know, print out Klaus Schwab's address to the World Economic Forum from Davos earlier this year, and I could just deliver that. I just deliver that, because that alone, it would get laughs, it would be poignant and funny, because the whole thing is just the biggest fear-mongering crisis upon crisis, the poly crisis, we must seize the means of control. Like, it's almost a parody in and of itself. So
it would be hilarious.
maybe I'll just do that.
It would totally work. I do want to give a little shout out to TAP, the American Project. I met Patrick Byrne pretty recently. He was on my podcast, and he's been an instrumental part in helping to make this all like really come to fruition. And I'm so incredibly grateful. It's funny. I teased him on the podcast because I was like, well, finally, it's only taken 3 years to get an interview with you. And he's like, I'm so sorry it took so long. But it was great. And clearly it was just meant to be that it would happen this way. So
it's all coming together.
Yeah.
Ben, I wonder, what do you think? Have ChatGPT write your next song? Are you incorporating AI into your artist process?
I have messed a little bit with that. I have asked it some ideas for songs, and they're not as good as human songs yet, but it could definitely give you ideas. I think it could definitely probably come up with a line or so here and there.
Maybe I'll just have ChatGPT write my speech. Maybe that's a good solution to all of this.
It just keeps getting better. It might work.
Yeah, it very well could. But of course, that, you know, that really is what we're up against. And I think that's, to me, that's what unites everybody, is being pro-human. I remember years ago talking to a friend, and he was like so confused because he was a liberal guy and he was arguing with somebody on Facebook or something. And he was like so offended that they called him anti-human. He was like, Why would they think I'm anti-human? Like, he couldn't even fathom what that was. What does it mean to be pro-human versus anti-human? I want both of y'all's answer on this. We only have about a minute left. But, Ben, what does it mean to be anti-human versus pro-human?
The anti-humans, I think he's a good example, your friend, is a lot of them are unaware that that's kind of what they've fallen in line with. But you see it by the fruits, and a lot of these folks, you know, I always call them godless freaks, which is probably not the nicest, but it just seems to resonate, and it seems to be kind of a nice catchphrase for liberals, really.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it seems to be about all of them.
Worse things than that, Ben. Godless heathens would be a compliment compared to some of the things I've referenced. Courtney, human versus anti-human, is that the division that we're fighting?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. You know, I always say I think their agenda is to lead us into a transhuman, ultimately post-human world that's controlled by an AI hive Borg mind that they program and then have us siloed in the metaverse. So I think that, you know, but I do think Ben's right that a lot of these people do not realize that what they're following is an anti-human agenda. There are people who really do want to replace humans, merge them with machines, and ultimately, replace them with chimeric type of, you know, machines that put us in a singularity. I keep quoting Kurzweil and joking, the singularity is near. But I think to be pro-human is to really celebrate, you know, what makes humans human. And we are so unique, and I think we're really, I think human beings are just so beautiful, and just that I think there's so much that makes us unique and special.
Computers can be smarter than us, ants are better organized than us, but they don't have art, they don't have emotion, that's what makes us human. I think you're exactly right. RebelsForCause.com, tomorrow and Sunday at the Liberty Hall at the Factory in Franklin, Tennessee. Hope to see you there. I'll be jetting out momentarily, and Reese will be taking my place. Be nice to him, won't you?
This is all part of what the globalists call the managed decline of the West, but really it's a managed decline of the entire world.
Woke is supposed to advance equity in Europe. The definition of equity comes from the public administration literature. It was written by a man named George Frederickson. And the definition is an administered political economy in which shares are adjusted so that citizens are made equal. They're going to administer an economy to make shares equal. The only difference between equity and socialism is the type of property that they redistribute, the type of shares. They're going to redistribute social and cultural capital in addition to economic and material capital.
Well, behaviors are going to have to change, and this is one thing we're asking companies. You have to force behaviors, and at BlackRock, we are forcing behaviors.
And so this is my thesis. When we say, what is woke? Woke is Maoism with American characteristics, if I might borrow from Mao himself, who said that his philosophy was Marxism-Leninism with Chinese characteristics, which means woke is Marxism.
Henry Kissinger attributed to a book with the head of the Kissinger Group, Rothkopf, now about 15 years ago, called Superclass. They say it's about 3,000 people worldwide that are the main manager class that run it all. This is a totalitarian transhumanist death cult.
The biggest question in maybe in economics and politics of the coming decades will be what to do with all these useless people.
It is an extension of the North American man-boy love association who think that grown men should be able to have sex with your little boys. That's what's going on here.
These big companies have no right to tell us what to do. And I think we as legislators need to think about it, who we're representing, because these agencies do not represent with the people. They represent big special interest group. People rotate between them. They get a job and lobbying and careers and all of these different companies, and they are promulgating these rules to benefit large special interest groups. And now they are becoming so powerful that everyone is afraid to challenge them. So our branch has to get our act together and start doing our job and not be afraid of administrating cooperative state, not be afraid of large corporation and big money that coming from all directions, but we actually remember that this republic is set up in being the greatest republic in the history of the world for all the reasons. There is no difference between the people, because the people have the most power and freedoms, and if we take these freedoms away from we the people, we are going to unfortunately abandon and betray all the people who die for our freedoms. I yield back.
The reason humanity is in so much trouble is because we will not admit to ourselves that true evil exists, and when methodologies of total evil and corruption are being carried out against us, we will not come to grips with the fact that we are truly facing absolute, pure, total corruption.
The FBI interfered in the 2016 election, and then when they failed to get their candidate elected, Hillary Clinton, then they just set out to destroy the Trump administration. So then go up to 2020. It was the CIA this time that got involved in the 2020 election with those 51 former intel agents who talked about the Hunter Biden laptop as total Russian disinformation. Mm-hmm. So they've gotten away with it for two elections. They're for sure going to get away with it, try to get away with it in 24, right? Because there's no consequence. The difference is in 2024, the evidence is there. We now have the Durham investigation. We have all the congressional investigations. There is now hard evidence that there was election interference by the U.S. intelligence agencies and the Department of Justice. They've got to be terrified. Those individuals have to be terrified that a Republican president comes in the 2024 election with a Republican attorney general, investigates them, and charges them all with the crimes they've committed over the last 8 years.
Then you study the Bible and history and our enemies, and they are a consortium of people following what can only be called satanic principles.
Hey, do you guys support the satanic pride propaganda?
Yeah, both.
You support it?
Satan and pride.
You support Satan?
Mm-hmm.
What's God going to think of that?
I don't believe in God. Said that.
You guys are satanic.
True.
See, open satanic. Satanist, guys, that's what we're going to get up against, is open Satanist. Like her.
If you're watching or listening.
My name is Reese Marrero. I am the fill-in host for this hour going forward for Harrison Smith. Harrison Smith is now jetting off to the Rebels for a Cause event in Tennessee. We wish him good luck and some safe travels there. I mean, just looking at the lineup for that event, it's just a who's who of just freedom fighters and content creators right now. And if I was in Tennessee, what else are you going to do this weekend? I mean, it just looks like an absolute blast. So if you're in the area, definitely make sure, just get out there and go see it. If you've never been to an event like that, where you're just surrounded by people who are just on the same page like this, that just have a pro-human future in mind and are just pro-human and just love freedom, it's really like nothing else you've ever experienced. The thing that the left gets so wrong about us, truthers, the pro-freedom and pro-human people, is that they just think we're full of hate. They think, oh, you must be so full of hate. Look at you. No, it's the complete opposite. We love people. We love our brothers and sisters. We love God. We love freedom. And when you go to something like this, it's just, you just make instant friends, and it's a great time. So definitely make it out there if you can, and go see Harrison speak and see all the other wonderful speakers share their thoughts. So without further ado, guys, we'll be taking phone calls for the rest of this hour. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. The number to call is 1-877-789-2539. Again, that number is 1-877-789-2539. So give us a call. We'll get the calls lined up. But in the meantime, I just wanted to take a moment to express my gratitude to Harrison for giving me this opportunity to share some time with you guys here, if only for just an hour, and to get to know you guys better. I've never filled in as a host here before. I've certainly interacted with a lot of you at certain events and whatnot, and that's been a blast. But I've never had this opportunity to just interact with you in this very unique way. And I'm really looking forward to taking some of your calls here. And I wanted to also just give a shout out to the crew, the hardworking crew
We all wear so many different hats here. Since starting this job about almost 2 years ago now, it's really hard to believe it's been that long. I've just met everybody here, and it's just here. We're really, really hardworking people, the hardest working people you've ever met. We really, really do care about our mission here and what we do here, InfoWars. And I just will always be grateful to my brothers in the back over there and what we do here. We all support each other. We all lend a hand. And it's just been a wild ride. So thank you to InfoWars. Thank you to Alex. Thank you to Harrison. Thank you to everybody here for keeping this ship afloat, keeping this this operation going. But also thank you. Without your support, we wouldn't be able to do this. And yeah, just thank you from the bottom of my heart. So with that being said, I want to, let's see, we've got a lot of articles here. Harrison didn't have time to get to some of the stuff he wanted to hit. And with the time remaining, I think I want to comment. I want to take some time to comment on one of the last articles he touched upon, which was this one over here, which was the Skynet has arrived article, the Air Force drone simulation going awry and taking out the pilot. I kind of want to touch on the subject of AI with the 5 minutes we have left here and give you my quick take on what I believe AI really is right now. And just something to keep in mind with this is that it's only going to get more and more sophisticated. That much is clear. There's a clip I think I'm going to play going forward at some point, if I have time, of Yuval Noah Harari just going like, oh, if AI is an amoeba right now, then imagine what AI T-Rex will look like. And it's just, it's creepy. He looks like a subterranean goblin creature when he says something like that. But it's true. It's AI is going to get extremely sophisticated in a matter of just a few years. And even the best of us, some of us even the most committed to truth and kind of seeing above psyops, we're going to get fooled into thinking that this AI system has consciousness. It's a real boy, some Pinocchio type stuff. And we must remember that AI, no matter how sophisticated it gets, is just a complex, interconnected series of algorithms that is just a function machine. Inputs, outputs, and then the executions therein. Nothing more. You can dress it up all you want, but at the end of the day, that's all AI is ever going to be. Even if it's something that appears like the Samantha, the AI in the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix, where it has a sexy, smooth female voice that kind of lures you into this illusion. It's only ever going to be a machine. It does not have the divine spark of humanity in it at all. That's not how this works. And so something that I was thinking about the other day, and I made a quick report on this, is that we're going to see, I think, primarily liberals going forward, championing human rights for artificial intelligence. They're going to be the loudest, proudest proponents of giving human rights to artificial intelligence, equating it on the same level as us, humans. And I was thinking about this, and there's just this deep-set irony baked into that, in that, you know, on the conservative side of things, we're very pro-life. We're very pro-human. We want to see humanity flourish in the future. And so, of course, when it comes to the abortion debate, we care about preserving life in the womb. We want to see all pregnancies carried out to term and to see that baby come into this world. And so that's real life. That is real life that's living and breathing, that has a soul, not AI. And so the argument that the left always uses against conservatives when we talk about this pro-life, pro-choice issue is that what's in the womb, even at the earliest stages, is, oh, it's just a clump of cells. It's just a clump of cells. Come on, give me a break. That's always been their argument. I think there's going to be this really strange inverted form of this argument taking place going forward when it comes to the idea of this pro-life AI argument, where we are going to be put in the position of having to grab the left or anybody who's anti-human, who's all for AI, by the collar and shaking them and going, it's just lines of code. It's just lines of code. So I think there's this strange inverted baked-in irony to this coming era that we're facing with this AI, where we're going to be the ones having to rightfully call out and minimize the sophistication of this false tech-driven form of pseudo-life that's coming upon us. I just think that's something to consider, because that's what we're going to see going forward. We're going to see a lot of people going, it's real. My AI chatbot girlfriend, she really does care about me. She loves me, bro. Come on, just treat her like a human being. No. Elevating that AI chatbot to the level of human cheapens what it means to be human. It cheapens our divine spark to bring something so artificial on that same horizontal plane. It's an insult. And that's something to keep in mind. That's what we're facing in this world. The elites and the globalists want to cheapen what it means to be human at every single turn. So stay vigilant, stay aware of that, and make no mistake, AI is going to be one of the chief tools in that toolbox to push that agenda going forward. We'll be right back on the other side with your phone calls. Don't go anywhere. InfoWarsStore.com. All right, everybody, we are back. We are live in this segment of the American Journal. I'm your guest host, Reese Marrero. That was an awesome liner, and that kind of goes back to what I said before in the first segment there about how here at InfoWars, among the crew, we wear so many different hats, and we have so many talented people here. That was Sean doing the voiceover intro liners there. He makes them a fresh batch of them every single week. We love Sean, and we appreciate him very much. Cool. So from this point on, we'll be going to your calls. I'm going to go ahead and take them in the order they were received here. We have Joyce from Chicago. Joyce, you're on the air. Hello, Joyce. Can you hear me? Okay, I'm not sure if we've got you there, Joyce. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, we've got you now, Joyce. You're on the air.
Okay. First of all, I want to plug a product that I have not seen plugged. A lot of people have parasites in their body, and they don't know it. Mm. And the black walnut that he has in that product is one of the few things that can flush out parasites. I did some research on it, and that's why I bought that product. Also, I've only come to Alex Jones in the last 2 years, and the only reason I did it is because I kept saying he's evil. So I was actually shaking when I went on to InfoWars because I was so bamboozled by the corporate media. And once I saw what Alex was talking about, I said, that's it. That's exactly it. But I want to say one thing, and I want it to be brought to Alex. I watch him struggle with such anger and fear. He has to get the fear and anger out of him, because the Lord is blessing people and guarding people that know the truth. He has to know that I pray every day the Holy Rosary, and the Holy Rosary is the most powerful prayer there is in the world, and he is protected. Not only, and he has it wrong about Catholicism. Catholicism is one of the most true religions ever. We don't pray to the Virgin Mary. We pray this prayer: Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blesses the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, intercede to your Son for us, because sometimes we're not strong enough to pray. So we do not pray to the Virgin. It's always God and Jesus. And it makes me very mad when say, oh, they pray to the Virgin Mary. I hate to tell you this, but we do the Eucharistic, which is every day we do the Mass, and we say, this is my body. And the priest takes it and he eats it. And he prays, just like the priests in the old time. And then he says, this is my blood, and he drinks the wine. Then he prays to the Holy Spirit so that his people in the church can come and take the wafer of the Lord, that this is his body, and he has given that up to us. So Catholicism is actually the most true religion, and they're after the Catholics because they know it. They're after all the Catholics that are true Catholics. I know I'm on the list. I definitely know. Because I listen to the Duran, and Duran, if you really want to know what's going on in Ukraine, you go to the Duran. They have their, they have a person in Greece and a person in England, and they can break it all down. They know exactly what's going on with the Ukraine war. So I listen to the Duran every day to find out what's going on with Ukraine, because in 1931 at Fatima, which is the appearance of the Virgin Mary, she says to three young girls, the only way to stop this is you have to stop communism. And the way to stop communism, you must pray the Holy Rosary once or five times a day, because you are saying to God, please, Mary, please, this is your holy son. Please intercede for us, because sometimes our prayers are too weak. But she can take those prayers and elevate it to her holy son that she had to watch her son die on the cross. Not only was Jesus suffering, but his mother.
Yes, Joyce, I if I may interject and give some commentary on what you said, I think the story of the passion of Jesus and his stations on the cross and that whole story in Scripture is absolutely beautiful. And I think it doesn't really matter what denomination you choose to follow. I think if you love God and you love his son Jesus, which I know that Alex certainly does, I think we are all on the same page. And I think it's regrettable that we get into these ideological squabbles over our love of God and we kind of lose sight of the bigger picture. And I appreciate everything you said about all of that. I think I resonate with it fully. And I appreciate your comments earlier about the parasites. I think parasites are really a silent killer. They're a slow killer, rather. They wear you down over time, and you just have no idea they're there. So I'm really glad that you were able to get a lot out of that product, and it was able to change your life in a positive way. Joyce, thank you so much for that call. We're going to go on to, let's see, we are going to go to Jeremiah in Ohio. Jeremiah, welcome to the American Journal. You are on the air.
Hello, hello. Are you there?
Hi. We can hear you.
Yeah, so I don't know if you've ever looked into the banned Matrix comics, the ones that got banned, but there's the very first one in the series talks about how AI will get human rights. And as a kid, when I was reading that, it never made sense, but now in the future, 2023, it's actually pretty probable of actually becoming reality, which is pretty nuts to me. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think I missed a little bit of what you said a moment ago. You said you're discussing the idea of AI getting human rights. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was in a Matrix comic book that ended up getting banned and not released to the public.
Oh, okay.
It was like Burly Man comics.
I've actually never read that or seen that. I didn't even think they made Matrix comic books. I know they make a lot of graphic novels of a lot of movies, but I just missed that one somehow. Yeah,
it was in the early 2000s, and it ended up getting banned and some kind of legal rights, and it never came out.
Interesting. Was there any extra nuggets of truth thrown into that comic book that was outside of the movies? Anything new they decided to add or maybe take away? Jeremiah, do we still have you? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, no worries, man. Thank you so much for that call. The Matrix is just an endless rabbit hole, as it's said in the movie, of truth. It just is the gift that keeps on giving as far as fiction is concerned. So thank you very much for that call, Jeremiah. With 1 minute left, we're going to take a quick call. We might see you again on the other side. We're going to go to Andrew in New York. He wants to talk about the replacing the globalist system. Andrew, you are on the air.
Just have an illusion of power right now. The Durham thing, Q actually predicted on a Q proof the exact day that Durham was going to have his thing. And the military is going to refer it to DOD or something. But also, there's going to be a change to next phase internet, which is quantum. And there's going to be all kinds of different technologies, phone and also the Sarah Jassera is Death Forgiveness and Repayment.
Yeah, absolutely. That's some interesting stuff there, Andrew. I regret we just ran out of time here. Thank you for that call very much. We will see all of you on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere. InfoWarsStore.com. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the American Journal. I'm your guest host, Reese Marrero, filling in for Harrison Smith, who is now jetting off to the Rebels for Cause event in Tennessee. If you're in that area, once again, please try to make it. It's going to be a blast. You will have a great time, guaranteed. I want to share a story with you this segment. I want to open this segment by sharing a little thing that happened to me when I was a bit younger. I was in high school and I was running on the track team, the cross country team, and I was doing pretty well. And in my senior year, the year you really want to kind of go all out for college applications, I ran into an issue that was a complete mystery during track season. I was fatiguing a lot faster than I normally would in my workouts. It was a complete mystery. Like I said, my coach couldn't figure it out. My dad, who was really practically assistant coach, could not figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. I was doing all the right things. I was eating right. I thought I was. I was certainly training very hard. I was going all out. But something just kept happening where in my workouts, the final hour, I would just kind of peter out. And we just couldn't figure it out. And so all of this culminated in the district meet for track season, a very important meet that basically after that comes the regional meet and then the state meet. So you have to place in the top three individually in your race if you want to make it to the regional meet, which is a big deal, and then go on to the state meet, et cetera. And so this race, this two-mile race was it. I had to be in the top three. I had to place at least third to make it, and I was dead set on doing it. And to make a long story short with that, it was the final lap, and the bell rings whenever you're on the final lap, and I was going, and I felt it happening again. And it was this strange fatigue that was different than just normal muscle tiredness, whatever you want to call it. And I was pushing through it, and I was just going all at it. I was laying the hammer down, and it got to the final 50 meters. I could see the finish line right ahead. My coach was yelling. My parents were yelling. My teammates were going crazy. The crowd's going wild. I was in third place. And then, boom, like lightning, my legs locked up. My whole body seized, and I fell 50 meters from the finish line. And I crawled and I crawled and I don't know what happened. Like I said, it was like lightning struck me. I was crawling to that finish line. It was so painfully close. It was right there. And unfortunately, in that fall, I lost third place. Third became fourth. Fourth became fifth. I got up and I staggered across that finish line and I looked like a ghost. And I had to be taken off the field and looked at because my lips were white. I was just pale. It was bad. And so I said, that's it. I'm going to figure out what happened here. This is the last straw. We went to the doctor and I had a full blood panel done. And basically the doctor came up to me and he said, Reese, you are a healthy young guy. You're 18 years old. Everything else came out great. You're clearly in great shape. But I want you to look at this. Look at your iron, Reese. This scale, I think it was out of some weird number. It was a scale of 0 to 17 or 18. I was a 2. I was a 2. I was anemic. I was eating red meat. I wasn't going full vegan or anything like that, but I was not optimizing my diet and nutrition correctly, unbeknownst to me. I thought I was eating enough iron. I thought I was eating enough red meat, but I wasn't. I was deficient in one little thing. Everything else was perfect. One little thing cost me that win. One little thing cost me that glory to go on with my teammates who finished first and second. So with that being said, I want to emphasize the importance of being on top of your micronutrients. Having full sovereignty and awareness over what goes into your body, what we eat, is important now more than ever, given that the soils are so depleted and that the globalists are just destroying our food supply, just drying it out of all the vital things we need. It really can be just one thing, folks. It really can just be one thing that you're missing in your life that is blocking you from fulfillment a clear head, energy. That's really what it comes down to. For the wonderful creatures that we are, human beings, the souls that we have, there is a mechanistic aspect to life where you do have to kind of treat yourself as a machine, inputs and outputs. What goes in really does matter. So please visit InfoWarsStore.com to make sure that you are fully optimized in all of these key micronutrients, whether it looks like X3, which is now in stock, still on sale up until next week, or any of the other supplements that we have, Whole Foods multivitamin being a very powerful choice. You have to claim sovereignty over your body and make yourself fully optimized in order to function in today's society. So I just wanted to share that quick story for you guys. Hope it gave you some clarity and insight on the importance of doing that. It really can come down to just one thing. So cover those bases by visiting InfoWarsStore.com. Without further ado, guys, I'm going to go back to your calls. Let's go to Simon from Florida, a regular contributor of the American Journal. He has something to say. Positive happened for InfoWars yesterday. Simon, it's great to finally meet you.
Hello there, Reese. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Thank you ever so much for giving me the opportunity to speak to the audience again. For a change, rather than me being the harbinger of doom, I actually have an extremely positive story to relay. So, two of Harrison's hardcore fans, Ben and Hob from Nebraska, they had heard me on one of my previous appearances with you folks, and they reached out to me to ask if I would like to participate in their small podcast that they have running on Rumble. And the address for that is Rhodes, plural, and then the number 2, and then the word Liberty, Rhodes to Liberty. So I had spent a great deal of attention on President Biden's speech yesterday, and there is actually a lot of very, very important information other than his fall at the end of it. People go to their Rumble page, they can hear the three of us talking, and believe it or not, we spent 8 minutes analyzing the content of the middle 13 minutes of Biden's speech. There was that much important stuff in it. But it just was a brilliant example of cooperation between three relatively small InfoWar contributors and fans. But having said that, a very famous person in Britain called George Galloway, whose show I've been on about 10 times this year, he saw this very small podcast that I had promoted, and he forwarded it to 500,000 Twitter followers. So it just goes to show what an incredibly positive effect that the American Journal and InfoWars can have to get a small show like Road to Liberty into the wider audience and actually present some information that a lot of the media glossed over simply because Biden had a fall.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that, Simon. And you're absolutely correct. This is a testament to the power of like minds meeting up for a good cause. And the InfoWars community is certainly no exception to that phenomenon. We're very happy for you. We're glad you're getting more exposure. You're one of the most foremost analysts in this information war when it comes to covering the waterfront in geopolitics. I know you were just on Alex's show the other day, and you were giving a lot of insightful readouts of some geopolitical stuff that was happening as well. We really appreciate you, Simon. And that's the thing I was saying earlier as I opened the show. Whether you go to a physical in-person event or you're just connected through Twitter or just any other kind of platform, there's so much power in just tapping into this resonance of wanting to be on the side of truth, expanding the line of truth and fighting for it together. And we're very, very happy to hear that you're getting your message out there and getting all that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, final segment of the American Journal. I'm your guest host, Reese Marrero, editor and crew member here at Infowars.com, filling in for Harrison Smith. In this final segment, I want to touch on the subject of pride. As we know, it's Pride Month. Pride Month is in full swing as of just yesterday. And it's a time where all of conservative media and all conservatives tend to just let out a collective groan, and rightfully so. What we witness during this month is just unbridled displays of complete degeneracy, public nudity, lewdness, and a lack of humility that's jarring to anyone at any time, I think, throughout history, any time before and up till present. It's jarring no matter when. And I think that in the hubbub of the rainbow flags, the rainbow pride parades, we lose sight of what pride really is. We lose sight of the sin that it is, what it really means, what is really at the root of that. And I want to take a moment here before I go back out to your calls to discuss, give you my take rather on what I think the root of pride really is. I'm going to cover a couple of articles here. So first article we've got here from the Gateway Pundit, it begins, U.S. embassies around the world fly pride flag. Yes, once again, the humiliation ritual is in full swing. They fly the flag as a way to show that they've conquered territory, and it's a global phenomenon, no less. That's what we're experiencing there. And then lastly, I have this article here. And for the sake of your eyeballs, for the sake of not having to immediately run to the nearest eyewash station, I've spared you the photo associated with this headline. Glamour magazine features pregnant transgender man on cover for Pride Month. They're rubbing it in your faces, folks. They're rubbing it in your faces. And this childish behavior that manifests when someone is fully engrossed in pride, it's just that. It's childish. Glamour magazine and all the other outlets know exactly what they're doing when they're putting something like this on the cover. It's the equivalent of a kindergartner who, I suppose, is just picking on another kindergartner, knowing the one thing that gets that one's goat, whether it's like poking him with a pencil or something like that, and going, oh, you don't like that? You don't like that? Oh, nanny, 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 just doing that over and over again. And that's what these people do when they're doing this. It's a very childish, developmentally stunted way of being. But I think if you go further into what pride really is, it's not necessarily an expression of vanity. When we think of someone being puffed up with pride, we picture someone utterly narcissistic, obsessed with their own reflection. They can't get over themselves, and they're just walking around, strutting around, acting like they're all that. But if you go deeper into what pride is, I think it's actually someone who fears looking into the mirror the most. They're not obsessed with their own reflection. They're obsessed with an idealized, egotistic vision of themselves that is perfect, flawless, and can do no wrong. That's all they experience, and that's all they see when they're corrupted by pride. To show a real mirror in front of someone like that is horrifying to them. And so when someone is corrupted by pride, I think what it really looks like is someone who's stumbling around an endless dark chasm, just corrupted by this notion that they can do no wrong and that pleasure is the highest principle. If you can't, and they fear the light too, that's the other thing. And I'm not going to go too biblical with this, but they fear a light coming into that darkness and showing them for what they really are, illuminating their being and highlighting their faults for not only them, but the world to see. So how does this take place? Well, certainly it takes place in pride parades where people engage in a lifestyle and promote it, thinking that they're invincible, thinking that this lifestyle of hedonism and pleasure-seeking behavior is without consequences. It certainly manifests like that. But it also manifests in other ways that we've seen, especially regarding the vaccine psyop. How many people have you talked to who have been corrupted by pride, who when you explain to them and showed them documents in front of their face that the vaccine is harmful, you shouldn't take it, I love you, I don't want you to get hurt, said, no, no. I'm a genius. I know better. I'm with the science. I know what's best. And they refused. It's that darkness that they're in. They don't want to accept the idea that they could be wrong, that they are a flawed being. But the irony of this whole situation is that if that light shines through when you're corrupted by pride and you're wandering around spiritually in this darkness, if that light shines through, the pain of seeing your faults is only a temporary thing. There's a short-term pain that comes with that, that sure, it's a little bit uncomfortable. Your ego is a little bit damaged. You're not perfect. You might have some appetites that you need to look at and reassess. But on the other side of that comes acceptance. You can accept yourself for who you are, own your faults, and then proceed through life accordingly with a full picture of who you are and who you are truly capable of being. That's what lies on the other side of pride, if you can overcome it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. But unfortunately, we live in a world where so many people, for whatever reason, are just not willing to do that. They're not willing to take that extra step to allow that light to shine through, whether it's divine intervention from God telling you, this is who you are, whether you like it or not. You might be imperfect, but I made you and I love you. So accept that and live your life. It can look like that. Or it can look like a friend coming to you with information about the vaccine or something else that you're not willing to see. Whatever that light looks like, it's a beautiful thing. And it's something to cherish. And it's something that we at InfoWars certainly fight for every single day. So that's what I wanted to say about that. Thank you for hearing me out on that. I appreciate it. With that, we're going to go out to your calls for the rest of this segment here. We're going to go to White Rabbit from Wisconsin, who has some info for us about the deep underground military bases, the DUMs, and the history behind them. White Rabbit, you are on the air.
Hey, Reese, Peanut Butter Cup, how you doing? happy Friday. Yeah, Alex Jones is always ahead of the curve over the horizon, and he was talking about, like, Zuckerberg and Hawaii underground stuff being built, and there's, of course, you know, the military stuff being built. You know, Russia has it publicly, underground bases for their populace, and it just makes sense that the U.S. would have the same, especially considering, like, the boring and drilling machines after World War II they came out with. But more so over, people also forget that in ancient times, caves and underground networks were very important to protect the civilizations of the past from invaders, from attacks, or just in general, the wealthy from the populace. I mean, like, I've been to Athens before, and I think the Parthenon on top of the Acropolis, underneath the Parthenon, like this giant rocky cave network. You know, I think there's some underground stuff in Athens, obviously in Italy, obviously in France. There was a news article where an underground catacomb opened up to a checkerboard elementary school classroom. DARPA released a bunch of information about how they were asking for contracts to do sonography and radar work and how to best work in military attacks and defense in underground tunnels. So I definitely think, you know, that's something that, you know, we should focus on, because, you know, if there ever is some sort of cataclysm, imagine the control you could have on the population that goes into these vaults or into these bunkers if they're not maintained by the civilization. I'm worried that maybe become a further laboratory experiment, seeing how, you know, these mad scientists operate in general. I thought wanted to dump all that rabbit hole stuff on you.
I totally agree. I've certainly been seeing more headlines about these DUMs. I know Greg Reese has brought light to the DUMs as of late. And I don't know how I feel about it. I think we're seeing a lot of info being put out there in works of fiction about there's info out there out the wazoo, games like Fallout 3, Fallout 4. talking about fleeing nuclear apocalypses. There's lots more of that happening right now. And the reason why I can't really decide where I'm on with it is that I have to wonder if all of this new media, this Oppenheimer movie coming out, is all part of a larger psyop to maybe instill fear that might not be fully founded when it comes to nuclear weapons. I think fear is the main virus here. I think we should be aware of it. So thank you very much for that call. It's been an honor hosting this last hour. Thank you very much. InfoWarsStore.com.